Hey, what's up? 朋友们大家好呀，欢迎收听 Asian Answers 佐治亚小帅。如果您使用苹果播客收听，请一定帮小帅写一个评论，留五颗星星，对我将会是莫大的鼓励。10月19号周六会在西雅图地区有听友会，我最近刚刚确定了特邀嘉宾，就是播客提前退休那些事儿的大师姐，公众号也是同名哈，狮是狮子的狮，这是小帅的一个秘密武器，朋友们。之前很多嘉宾都是在大师姐的提前退休 fire 群里挖掘的，所以这是小帅的一个秘密武器。包括之前在加拿大木工又做的老板的 Rachel， 留学生搞家政创业的 Johnny， 短租专家 Joyce 都是群友啊。所以我10月份将要去西雅图之后，并且确定要办第一次的线下活动之后，就马上跟大师姐联系。活动呢会在 Rachel 的场地， Rachel 就是我最爱的播客没有之一瞎聊会的主要发起人，听名字就知道这是一个西雅图地区的播客。他有一个咖啡馆叫 Story Coffee Bellevue， 至少能放20-30个人。他说小帅不收你的钱，走的时候把地方收拾好就行。我说太好了，那这样的话听众也可以免费来。所以朋友们，10月19号周六晚上，西雅图地区的朋友们都可以来，并且欢迎携亲带友的来。报名的话欢迎加联系方式小帅 FM。 好了，说回这期节目，这期番外有点意思，不应该叫 Asian Answers， 应该叫 Asian Ask。 是我采访的佐治亚州本地的一位黑人夫妻 Troy 和 Trisha， 他们都非常能折腾，搬了好几个地方。一开始在乔治亚的海边小城市 Savannah 长大，后来做卡车公司做的不小，正在盖自己的大仓库，但是呢2008年被金融危机干趴下了。夫妻俩后来搬到北加州的 Sacramento， 后来又去盐湖城，中间有过几年的打工生涯，但毕竟是当老板的人哈，打工只是过渡一下，后面东山再起，几年后又是一个十几个车厢的卡车公司老板了。当时是在一个线下的 Meetup 认识他们俩，参与的基本上都是亚特兰大本地的人，有一两个是开了超过一个小时过来的。我就跟他们唠了半天的嗑，特别投缘，我说咱得录一期播客。我一直想开一个英文的访谈节目，从我这个第一代来美国的人的视角跟本地的小老板们聊天交流。我说虽然新节目的名字还没有起好，但是我要先邀请你。他俩人很好啊，在节目还是零订阅的时候，我空口拍牙的说他们就愿意来。周六录制的时候有些意外，聊了40分钟就不得不中断了，所以这一期剪了10几分钟的版本，大家且当预告片来听吧，回头我们再重新录。这次不是讲他的卡车物流业务，是他新开始的 Sober Living 业务。要么怎么说能折腾呢？ Sober Living 是租房市场的一个分支，它不是长租，比如你租一个房子住1年3年，也不是短租 Airbnb 那种住2个晚上，而是专门给需要治疗恢复的人临时住半年啊、6个月啊、5个月的分租住房。而且居住者常常是正在接受治疗的瘾君子、酒精成瘾或者无家可归的人，他们的条件在租房市场基本已经很难找到居住的地方了。所以 Troy 他们的业务还有不少的社会意义，不少朋友也听说了，就在上个礼拜，一个14岁的青少年就发生在乔治亚本地，拿着枪去本地的高中扫射，当场死了4个人，伤了30-40个，离我们非常近，非常悲剧。所以 Troy 的这种业务还是有不少的社会价值。那么怎么赚钱呢？因为单靠善心它肯定走不远，对吧？所以我们来听一听，如果喜欢小帅的节目，也欢迎推荐给周围的朋友。
I'm Troy Stee. We are the owners of Rise Up Living, and we have a transition housing program for individuals who are homeless or almost homeless, or who are recovering from alcohol or drugs, or who are getting free from incarceration. And we're here in Atlanta, Georgia. We also make housing available, affordable housing available for individuals who are getting out of halfway houses. So we're kind of a bridge when people who have fallen on hard times need a little bit of help to get from not so good place to a better place. And so our recovery program is not full service recovery program in that we don't administer medications, we don't monitor medications, we just provide the housing And then if an individual needs medication or medication monitoring, we have other outside companies come in to help us with those type of situations.
Let's say that's something like a bridge home. It's sober living.
Exactly, sober living. So we have a software program that when an individual comes in, we enter all their information into the software program. It creates a community among myself and the residents in the house where we can have weekly meetings via chat and we can keep up with each other. If somebody's having a bad day, we just go in and communicate back and forth through the program, and we can set up meetings when we're going to meet at the house face to face, or we're going to have a meeting like online. And so it's a tracking system, really, and it gives us the ability to report back to bigger organizations to let them know, like the state and the city, how many people we've helped. And so that system gives us the ability to kind of like be analytical. We just did a social media blitz to really announce kind of like a grand opening, and we've got a ton of responses coming in. We're kind of sifting through and doing our assessments of each person to make sure they're a good fit for the house. Because sober living is good. Sober living and real estate is a business. Mm-hmm. However, the business revolves around people. And so if we don't do a good job assessing people and matching up the right personalities inside the house, especially when you're dealing with sober living and recovery, it can turn into a disaster, a bad situation.
Give me some example. What do you mean? Bad personality.
For instance, I won't call his name, but we had a guy that we did a full assessment on. He presented himself very well. He had a great interview. He already had a job. He already had his money saved up. He seemed as though he had a plan, a goal that he wanted to get to. He wanted to become a truck driver, but he was currently like working at a hotel, one of the large hotels here in Atlanta. Customer service. We took him in, but what we didn't realize was he exited the program early. The recovery program that he was in, he exited early, and when he came to live with us, he was with us for like 3 weeks and he relapsed. And so when I say a bad situation, if you have a house full of guys who are definitely confident and they have decided that they're going to stay away from drugs and alcohol, if you bring one bad person into the house and they're on the fence and they're thinking, I'm going to come into the house and I'm going to go out and I'm going to smoke marijuana or I'm going to slip in and out and not do the right thing, and then they become a bad apple and infect everybody in the house.
That's one of my concern. If you are alcohol addiction program, you don't want to put a person who are alcohol addicted next to another one who is alcohol addicted. So would that happen?
It can be a problem. And that's why the co-living model is a better situation in a sense, because sometimes the guys inside the house, they will detect somebody that's backsliding before I detect or before the house manager detects it. And the community will come together and like, hey, bro, you got to get back on the straight and narrow. And then they'll be like, hey, Mr. Troy, Marshall is having a bad week. It sounds like he's talking like he's going to relapse and you might want to have an intervention with him. And so that community where the guys are living together, it's support. And so in a sense, it can be bad. If that one bad apple, his personality is stronger than the entire house, it can be really bad. But most cases, that's not going to happen. And so that's why that model, because some people on the outside look at it as if a bunch of guys sharing a house is not a good situation. But where they come from, it's a better situation than being alone sometimes.
So it must be someone who is paying for that rent, right? It sounds like non-profit.
Yeah, you got two different aspects of pay. So in some situations, when we do an assessment, we'll go through that individual's income to find out if they have a job or if they're receiving SSI or SDI, or if they're getting support from the rehab program that they're leaving. Sometimes those programs will pay the rent from 3 months to 6 months. And so when it's in a situation where they're supported like that, it's less stress on that tenant because they don't have to really worry about the job and making the payment for the monthly rent. And so it's better for us also because those programs, they guarantee the rent. Sometimes they're self-pay, and so we have to verify their job. In a typical landlord-tenant situation, like when we go to apply for an apartment, we fill out the application says you got to earn 3 times the rent amount. So if the rent amount is $500, a typical landlord says you got to earn $1,500 a month. And so our program is not that way. We try to make the barrier to entry really low so that the individual can focus on recovery and not necessarily having a certain amount of income. So we just verify that they are working, that they make enough money to break up their payments. So if they get paid weekly, we break up the payments in weekly. So if it's $600 a month, we'll take $150 a week just to make sure it's covered. Because we cover all the utilities. We cover the electricity, we cover the gas, the water, cable, the internet, everything. In that situation, that case, it makes it an easier situation.
That's pretty smart to collect the rent week by week. Because many of them will spend their money. If you collect at the end of month, you will not be able to collect 100% of your rent. I saw the church or some institution is going to pay for them, but it looks like they will need to pay themselves.
Sometimes they go to recovery programs that don't have enough funding or don't have any funding at all to support the clients after they leave. And so in that case, those programs make sure they get job skills while they're in the program, help them find a job before they leave the program so that when they do leave, they can support themselves.
So how much time you have started this sober living business?
4 months. We just started.
It was long-term before?
Before it was long-term. So in the duplex, both sides have 4 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms. So we got a total of 8 bedrooms and 6 bathrooms. And so one side is dedicated to the sober living. The other side is dedicated to a veteran and his family. And so what we plan to do is once we fully get the sober living side full, we have another house that we're going to transition the veteran and his family into so that they can improve their living situation as well. So it'll be a single family house.
So you're going to find another home for the current tenant and make both of the homes in that duplex to be sober. Why is that?
So I can say it's okay to mix the long-term rental, the sober living, but it's not ideal, not the best case scenario. So what we want to do is just have that entire house or that entire duplex, the sober living, and then move the long-term tenant to something that's more comfortable.
How do you have that idea?
We first lived in Savannah, Georgia. Then we moved to Sacramento, California. And then we went to Salt Lake City, Utah for like 7 years. You barely saw any homelessness in Salt Lake City. There was some, but not a lot.
Okay.
But when we moved here to Atlanta, it was like everywhere compared to Salt Lake City, Utah. Plus, I have a couple family members that were dealing with drugs and alcohol in their past. And so when I lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, I was a real estate agent. And so when I came here, I was looking at the real estate market. It was very good, but the prices were going up, up, and up, and up. So I was thinking about getting into real estate, but then I wanted to make sure that the rents could cover the mortgage, the maintenance, taxes, all the expenses. One day I just thought about helping people who are homeless and started doing research on the internet. And then the homeless issue came up, and then rehab and recovery issues started coming up. So I just merged the two, the real estate side with the sober living.
Okay, so you find some successful cases who has been already running.
Yeah, there are several recovery homes and transitional housing programs in the Atlanta, Georgia area.
How did you find them and how do they find you?
Google is the master. So you mean how did the residents find me? So what I did was I did a Google search for rehab and recovery, transitional housing, and 501c3 organization. What I do is I downloaded all these names of these organizations. I put them in my CRM, the names, the phone numbers, and the email addresses. So then I created a marketing package and I started sending out drip campaigns to let them know that I have a house in the area that's available for people who are experiencing alcohol, recovering from drugs and alcohol. After the email campaign, I would just start calling.
What is the marketing package?
My marketing package contains just an introduction. Hey, I'm Troy. I'm the owner of Rise Up Living. We are new affordable housing provider in the area. We have a duplex that services individuals recovering from drugs and alcohol. Here are some of the pictures of the property. Here's how many bedrooms and bathrooms we have. If you have any clients that need housing, give us a call.
Okay, so you text message, you send emails, how many?
I have 2,000 names, phone numbers, and email addresses in my CRM. Right? So I didn't even need to contact them all in order to start generating phone calls coming back in. So once they found out we were available, it's such a huge need in the area, they started calling. The main problem, the biggest hurdle is as an operator, as an owner, you have to have a heart for people. It can't just be about the real estate. When you have this demographic in your house as tenants, it becomes more than just getting the rent. You have to care about the people. You have to care about them wanting to turn their life around, because it's more management than a long-term rental and a little bit more management than a short-term rental. So like, so for instance, a lot of these individuals, they don't have any family, or they have family who don't want to deal with them anymore because they've had such a bad history with them of being on drugs and alcohol. So in a sense, the guys that come into the house, they kind of become each other's family member. And then they kind of look to me like, hey, Mr. Troy, what's going on this week? I'm dealing with such and such and such. So it becomes kind of like a family away from family, versus just having a tenant in your property. I would say it's good because when you go with this model, you can generate more revenue than long-term, but at the same time, it's more maintenance.
So what type of management you offer for them?
So for the house, we've got 2 beds, 2 dressers, 2 nightstands in each room. So there's a little bit more cost as far as the furnishing. We have blank cameras in all the common spaces. So in the hallways, in the living room, in the kitchen, but not in the bedrooms. We let everybody know when they come in, they do an assessment. We have a form that lets them know that we have cameras in the house, that they sign to give us permission to record what's going on in common areas only. Another reason we have those is not just to monitor what they're doing, but because of safety reasons. So a lot of these guys, sometimes they're on medications. For instance, there was one guy, Sylvan, he had a history of seizures. And so he was going to be one of the tenants. He had filled out the form, didn't pay his deposit yet. But the day before he was coming to pay his deposit, he had a seizure and went in the hospital. And so those type of medical issues can come up. And so we want to be able to say, hey, we can see what's going on. We have their medical records and history in our documentation. So if the ambulance or anything has to come out for any type of issue, we at least have some information to share with authorities if they have to come out. The medical part is another reason we have the cameras, as well as safety. So what's next is we plan to start our 501c3 organization. So once we do that, we'll be eligible to get donations so that we can provide more housing to individuals. We'll be able to accept food from some of the food banks here in the city. So that'll help alleviate some of the costs that the guys incur while they're living, you know, while they're trying to transition.
501c is a nonprofit. What I understand is your duplex is going to make profit. How do that consolidate?
So it reconciles right now, we have the LLC that owns the house, does all the renting assessments of the clients. So then the 501c3 that we plan to start, that will give us kind of like a different platform to reach out to organizations that are larger than ours. And then they will be able to make donations, either cash donations, food donations, furniture, appliances, clothing. That will give those organizations a write-off because we're a 501c3 organization. And if they make monetary donations or any type of donation, cars or vans, transportation vehicles, they can write that off on their taxes and reduce their taxable income. Whereas as a LLC that holds the property, we wouldn't be able to give them that type of tax benefit for donations.
For you, where's the money all stuff goes to?
If they're making a monetary donation, that'll allow us to create our own rehab and recovery program. We'll be able to then hire staff to do evaluations and then run a full 12-step program that help people recover from drugs and alcohol. So as well as all the other software and legal compliances that come with that type of organization, that'll allow us to provide more services to individuals in-house versus having to bring in contractors to do that same type of work. So we would use those funds to just offer more. As we offer more to the guys that come in, we can not only just help the guys that we have, we could possibly get more property and then grow our ability to take in different types of people recovering from drug and alcohol. Because there are different levels of addiction. You have guys who are on the methamphetamines, cocaine. Those different type of levels require different type of services and different type of care. And so as we take in donations, we can then bring in more professionals that can provide that care. So if money comes in, that'll be able to pay salaries. We'll be able to drug test the 12-step program that's administered and given to the guys on a weekly and a daily basis. There are a lot of steps to the recovery process.
Okay. Yeah. So why do you want to start?
Once you start to interact with some of the guys, you see their situation is not too far away from my situation. I could have easily been, you know, right where they are just by one mistake. Like I was saying earlier, that care for people. If you don't love people, it's going to be very tough to grow in this business and stay in this business. So that's just the way we see it. You know, that's our goal, just to help more people.
节目最后，我再吼一声，如果您使用苹果播客收听，请一定帮我打一个五星，留一个评论，对我将会是莫大的鼓励。和 Troy 的正片回头录出来剪完之后，也会在这里面跟大家通知。现在 Spotify 也悄悄地上线了评论功能，我看看谁会是声破天的沙发哈。朋友们，我们下期再见，喜欢请转发，拜拜。